You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Alexander Kogelin, and I'm the CTO of Yellow Pepper.
Great, Alex. Thank you so much for finding time to join us today on the Ivy Podcast. Yellow Pepper, you guys been in the news. It's just for those who are not familiar. Can you tell us a little bit more about the company? What do you do and what falls under your purview?
Yeah, definitely. So we've been around for some time. So we were founded in 2004 and has since 2007 been focused on financial services. And we've been around for a long time, done a lot of mistakes. Learned the hard way how to launch successful products. But a couple of years ago, we launched our real-time payments platform. And really what it is a universal adapter for financial institutions for real-time payments. And, you know, not to geek out completely on real-time payments, but it's exactly what it sounds like. It's transactions that clears and settles in real time. So what we do is really integrate all these different real-time payments rails. So if it's local ACH, Visa Direct, MasterCard Send, Ripple, and so forth, integrate into our platform, publish one API that the banks can consume, and then they have an interface where they can set up the business rules for the program, routing rules, and everything like that. So, you know, all in all, we're trying to make it extremely simple and fast for the banks to launch real-time payment products.
Oh, well, that's exciting. You know, real-time payments has definitely been a lot of developments in the industry in general, and I'm excited to talk a little bit further about this with you. And as we talk about, you know, advanced technologies in general, you know, machine learning, AI, RPA, and so forth, they're reinventing a lot of industries as a whole. I'm pretty sure yours, you know, not an exception. I know it's a pretty loaded question, but from your standpoint, how do you see these trends in advanced technologies impacting your industry from innovation standpoint? And the other part that I'm curious about, what are the best strategies for other executives that they could leverage when it comes to implementing or leveraging such technologies?
Yeah, no, and I think that, you know, there is a lot of technologies out there that is going to transform the industries, you know, whether it's financial or health or any other industry. But if you're looking at right now, I think the cloud is tremendously transformational for all the industries, right? Because you have been able to reduce the time to market, cost structures are just diminished compared to what it used to be. So you have a far lower barrier to entry for fintechs and other challengers to come into the market. And then, you know, ultimately your scaling issues are completely gone as well. So I think right now cloud has been the most transformational, but, you know, one of the most important things of cloud is really how it works as a catalyst for all these other new emerging technologies, such as you mentioned, right? Like AI and ML. And, you know, these are technologies that are used today and everybody's using them, whether you know it or not, when you're, you know, doing your auto correction at Gmail or talking to Siri or Google Maps is, you know, telling you the fastest route home. So it has already had some impact, but, you know, not to its fullest potential, right? We're not really there where we have self-driving cars or robo-advisors or robo-doctors or robo-lawyers, but that's not necessarily so much a, you know, a technical issue. You know, the technology is there. It's more of an ethical issue, you know, on how do we want a self-driving car to act when it's inevitable accident coming up, or how are we handling the workforce that are going to be negatively impacted by these new technologies? And there, you know, we're not really ready for that as a society. We haven't had the discussions regarding policies and structure to the extent that we need in order to let AI and ML really loose. But, you know, there is still, you know, verticals that has been implemented and are doing great service in the financial industry with, you know, credit scoring solutions, fraud management solutions. You know, you have Betterment with their advising services and others like them as well. So they have definitely already had an impact. I would say that, you know, it's probably the fintechs that are driving it, but the traditional banks are also doing a lot, and you know, you're starting to see a lot of underwriting services you know, customer experience and customer service solutions coming out as well. And then in terms of, you know, implementing it, you know, these type of technologies are, as you said, transformational, right? So it's, I think you have to adopt it with care and caution. You need to really make sure that when you're launching something like this, that you're constantly testing it, constantly monitoring it. You know, we have seen a lot of these reports on algorithms being gender or racially biased. And this is something that you really need to make sure that you have under control and make sure that the decisions are being made out of relevant data and not because, you know, the algorithm grew biased in some way. So, you know, approach it with care, but definitely implement it and try to implement it maybe in a small use case at first, and then try to grow as you're becoming more confident and more knowledgeable within the field.
Right, absolutely. I talk to a lot of different executives from different organizations, different industries, but you know, the message is always, you know, very similar to what you're talking about. Those are buzzwords. Those are very, you know, sexy keywords that everyone's talking about. But when it comes to implementation, it's a little bit of a different strategy, and kind of what you've mentioned in terms of iterating and coming up with, you know, shorter cycles, shorter sprints, so forth. Get the feedback first, see the impact from that particular implementation, and then kind of make decisions from there. So that's pretty exciting. Thank you for sharing that. I want to talk a little bit about trends and some of the ideas, but before I do that, from financial technology perspective, have you always been in that industry? How did you get into that? What was your kind of the background career path?
No, yeah. So I've been an entire career more or less in financial technology. Have spent most of my time in the payments vertical, but also worked a little bit on electronic IDs and services like that. Early on in my career, I was very focused on product and worked the first half, I would say, of my career was really in different product roles. And then for the past 7 years, I've been as the CTO at Yellow Pepper and working on the technology side as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's super exciting. So from fintech trends that perhaps you're currently researching, or the trends that you're mostly excited about, tell us a little bit more about those. What are you researching? What are you excited about? Perhaps something that you look into, you know, start leveraging, implementing at your organization and so forth. Just curious to get your take on it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And you know, I'm slightly biased here, but we obviously believe real-time payments is something that is coming, and it's going to be, you know, within 5 to 6 years, we believe that most transactions are going to be based on real-time payment rails, whether it is a person-to-person transaction or corporate-to-corporate or a cross-border or fund disbursement, whatever it might be. We believe that, you know, there is no real reason for a transaction not to clear and settle in real time. But other than that, we're looking in a lot to digital currencies. And primarily the digital currencies we're looking in is to, you know, central banks launching digital currencies, so CBDCs. And this where there is a little bit of movement throughout the world. We look at China, they have a big initiative there. We have a couple of initiatives throughout Europe. There are some in Africa as well. So we're looking at that, you know, the nature of these organizations, obviously being central banks, you know, there is some red tape there. So it might take some time before we start seeing this on a, you know, a wider scale. But we are a firm believer in digital currencies. And, you know, we think it has a huge opportunity for financial inclusion, for more transparency into the financial ecosystem as a whole, whether that is, you know, payments or taxes or whatever it might be. So we really believe there is a tremendous opportunity there. Then something that I'm quite surprised that we haven't seen more of is electronic IDs. And this is, I think, a lot of governments and a lot of financial institutions, especially now during the pandemic, is starting to realize that you need to be able to authenticate and collect signatures in a standardized way online, whether that is for, you know, receiving a stimulus package check, or whether that is you signing a loan agreement or whatever it might be. There, we really need to have a standardized way for being able to do those type of authentications and signatures on those actions. And why I'm surprised that this hasn't really been implemented at a larger scale is if you're looking at like the Nordic region, for instance, they have had a digital ID on the mobile phone since 2012, where you can, you know, authenticate to any public, municipal, or private entity, and you can do anything from your taxes to.
Do you think it's because of the kind of increased regulations in US in that sense, or why do you think kind of US is a little bit slower adoption from that standpoint?
No, I think that there is a couple of issues, right? I think that, you know, we have a very decentralized ID management with the different states running the physical IDs. So I think that they haven't necessarily, you know, come together to see if there is something we can work on as a federal ID. Technologically, we're there, right? And, you know, the use case is clear. The more we know, all our transactions are going digital, so we need a uniform way to handle those actions and transactions. So I think that there is, you know, a complicated regulatory landscape with the states owning most of the current infrastructure, but I don't see it as impossible to get it done there. It might be that, you know, a lot of the banks needs to come together to show how to launch authentication and signature within their network to then be able to sell it to different governmental services. I think that there is a huge opportunity, and there is something we're gonna see a lot of innovation and movement going forward.
Right. No, that's super exciting. And the part of, as an organization, ProSource, we're also working on a technology solution that caters to the staffing world, IT staffing, financial staffing. And the model, kind of this product that we're building, is kind of the semi fintech solution, I guess. And, you know, it's just something, you know, that it's new to me, but it's very exciting in terms of all the research I've done in terms of the trends that are coming out of this, you know, not only the real-time payments, but also what you're talking about from authentication perspective, you know, electronic IDs, you know, the single sign-ons, and it's just, there's a lot of cool technologies that are really coming out.
Yeah, no, definitely. And if you're seeing at it, right, like if the financial industry has, you know, not necessarily been the most innovative industry for the past 50 years, where the most innovative thing one bank would do was to lower the interest rate, right? So they've been having a slow evolution. During the past 10, 15 years, there has been a lot of movements, and there is still a lot of verticals that needs to be addressed. So there is definitely room for innovation in our industry.
Which is a good thing.
No, for sure.
The kind of to switch topics a little bit towards innovation, I recently hosted an executive roundtable with the CTO of IBM, and the other gentleman was CTO of SAIC, which is one of the largest government contractors for IT modernization. So the theme of that webinar, that roundtable, was building and fostering a culture of innovation. And you guys being a technology organization, I would imagine that's also, you know, a very strategic initiative to continuously innovate, continuously improve, continuously come up with new solutions and ways to solve problems for your clients. So from your standpoint as a CTO of your organization, what strategies or initiatives that really helped you foster and really build that culture of innovation at Yellow Pepper? What are some of the principles that you follow that really help you cultivate that type of culture?
Yeah, no, it's exactly as you're saying, right? And especially for a company like us, if we don't innovate, we really lose our, you know, reason to exist. We are a financial technology company, and we thrive off, or we, you know, monetize by launching innovative solutions. And how we're trying to foster this mentality is really that we must try things out. We really need to be able to take things to market and see what the consumer thinks about it, and do that in a fast and cost-efficient way. Because we know, you know, not I, not our head of product, head of marketing, or head of commercial or engineering has really a clue on how the market will accept our products. And, you know, just to further state that point, a couple of years ago, our head of commercial came to me with a product that he wanted to build. And, you know, to state it mildly, I thought this is never going to fly. But we went ahead with it. And, you know, within a couple of months, it was our best-selling product. So we really need to make sure that we have a path to taking ideas to market in a cost-efficient way to make sure that we can try it out. And that's really what we're building up with a lot of small proof of concepts, where we can test it out in a controlled environment, see if it has any legs. If it has legs, let's continue. If we don't see any traction, let's jump on to the next idea. But this is crucial for us to be able to test this. And if we're looking at more from an internal standpoint, how we really foster that is making sure that, you know, ideas can come from anywhere in the organization. We have a standard template that anybody can fill out to make sure that this gets up to the product team and they can start doing the more in-depth research regarding product market fit and these type of things. So we're making sure that all ideas are welcome. We're making sure that, you know, we encourage our team to be out researching and studying different technologies or solutions. So we have our online learning platform where we encourage people to spend at least a couple of hours a week on that. We also do a lot of smaller forums where, you know, you can bring up a technology that you find relevant to our business, or a technology that you are just passionate about, whether that is, you know, anything in AI or video or whatever it could be. It's just really to get a knowledge transfer about what different technologies are out there, because, you know, we know we might not always work on the latest and the greatest technologies due to certain restrictions from, you know, the payment networks that we're integrating to or whatever it is. So we need to make sure that our resources can get the excitement of learning something new and learning new technologies, even though we might not implement all of them. So that's really how we're trying to get people engaged and still learning about what is out there.
That's exciting. And, you know, those examples definitely resonate. It's one of the recent books that I've read, which, you know, I've been recommending to everybody lately, is by one of my former professors at Harvard. He wrote this book, Experimentation Matters, and it really gives a glimpse into kind of case studies at a lot of very innovative companies that run these, you know, they build a culture of innovation through experiments. Yeah. Where you empower your organization at all levels to run experiments, to, you know, recommend experiments, and exactly what you were talking about, roll it out, you know, be very swift, be very lean and agile about collecting feedback and then making a quick decision whether to invest further or, you know, to kill the product. So I think that's kind of my take on what you were talking about. So that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And product development is tough, right? You know, we can all be, if we're designing the products for ourselves, we will be the greatest product people on earth. But, you know, unfortunately, it's a little bit more complex than that.
Yeah, exactly. And plus, you can run all the research groups or surveys all you want. You know, it's very hard to predict the actual behavior, how that would be perceived by your user, because at the end of the day, you know, you think that you know all of the problems your users are dealing with, but that's not always the case. So that's, it's, you know, sometimes it could be exciting. Sometimes it could be very frustrating because you could spend a lot of time working on a particular feature or product and it, you know, doesn't take any traction.
It's usually a very humbling experience.
Right, right, absolutely. As I mentioned to you previously, one of the core solutions at ProSource is all around talent. It's all around, it's staffing, it's our technology solutions for the staffing world. And a lot of the guests that I host on Ivy Podcast, all senior executives, and you know, for everybody at the top of their mind is always, how do I surround myself with winners, with the top people? Because as an executive, you're always on the hunt. You're always on the lookout. It's not like you only dedicate particular time to do that. Everyone you deal with, everyone you talk to is probably some type of an assessment, you know, hey, this guy is totally killing it. How do I get that person or girl onto my team? So the next couple of questions I want to ask you around, you know, from a standpoint of strategies to attract the top talent to your teams, what has worked well for you in the past? And maybe what has not? Just curious to get your perspective on that.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, it's a tremendously competitive environment right now, especially within the technology field, right? And this, you know better than me, but it's really, really tough out there. And obviously there is a lot of competition that you're meeting, you know, locally, but also internationally. So in order to really stand a chance there, right? I think that you need to start with, you know, some pretty basic stuff. You need to make sure that you have an attractive culture that people can buy into, that they feel representing their values, and then making sure that you have really promoting the opportunities to grow, right? Because highly talented people, they're always gonna be on the lookout for how can they evolve in their careers. And there is where you as an employer really need to be there to make sure that you can cater to those needs. So what we're really working on, we feel that we have a great culture, that we know that the team is buying into, but we're trying to create an environment where people actually enjoy their work, right? They like showing up to work and be in an environment where they're challenged and where they have great friendship and that they have control ultimately. We really, the past couple of years, have worked a lot with making sure that our team can decide however they want to get the job done. Whether that is working remotely or taking a couple of months in another country working there, whether that is, you know, working from noon to midnight or whatever fits their schedule. And there is really where we have put a lot of effort, or our HR team has done a tremendous work there. Mm-hmm. We're also obviously working a lot with work-life balance, making sure that people feel that they really can be flexible and go about their day and, you know, have time for their hobbies, have time for their families, and be able to get all the other parts of their life in order while working with us. So I think that those are, you know, some building blocks that you need to have there. But as I said, I think opportunity to growth and career paths is really something that is tremendously important. And here is one of the mistakes I think that we have done in the past is where, you know, we have always strived to be a very flat organization, short decision times and so forth. But when we were flattening in out the organizational chart, we really created a very limited room for growth, right? So there is something we're still working a little bit with that mix, making sure that we have, you know, defined steps in a career depending on what type of work you're in. And there is something that is an area of effort for us right now where we need to invest some time. But if we're looking at, you know, the opportunities, I think there is something we have done quite well. So if we're looking at my team, for instance, you know, every department head started in a junior position within the Yellow Pepper and is now in charge of the entire department. And which is obviously a great testament to, you know, their determination, drive, and talent. But I think that these type of messages is what you need to send to the entire company to show that there is opportunity for growth. And then when you have these type of resources in leadership positions, you know, they're tremendously well-rounded in understanding all the different areas of the business and have invaluable input regarding it. So that's extremely important, I believe.
Right, right. Absolutely. No, I think one thing that stood out is really creating that environment where your team members, the people that are part of your organization, are continuously challenged, meaning in the sense they're always working on something that allows them to either learn or, you know, obtain a new skill. I think it's of utmost importance to create that type of environment for people to continuously evolve, continuously grow. So I'm super excited to hear that. And also, kind of from leadership standpoint, the fact that, you know, you out there, you're outspoken about your team, your culture, your organization, I think that also helps. The fact that you're participating on Ivy Podcast, I think that's also a good message, because, you know, I'm not making any promises, but from my past guests, when we debrief and we talk about the impact of the episode coming out, some of the kind of the rewarding feedback that I've received from some executives is, hey, someone heard me talk about, you know, my leadership style or the projects we're running at this company, and they reached out and we actually hired somebody. I was like, wow, this is so cool.
This is great, right? And this is, you know, this is an important part for us to be out there and advertise ourselves, especially as a smaller firm, right? For we need to really be out there and actively try to compete against a lot of the other, you know, competitors we have out there, right? And there is where, you know, we have to obviously understand our place in the food chain, right? And, you know, we have had a hard time when competing against, you know, the Facebooks, the Googles, and everything like that. But when people leave for that, you have to be tremendously proud and extremely excited. And, you know, if they would leave for a small similar competitor than us, then we've done something wrong.
right. No, absolutely. And I love that you have that mentality of being the leader within the organization, is kind of being vocal about this, being, you know, putting it out there, the message that you're trying to get across, and get more visibility into the organization. Because a lot of times it's very hard to gauge an organization just through an interview.
Yeah.
So I think episodes like this, I'm very excited about getting a little bit more in depth as far as who is the leadership, what type of culture is within the organization, what are the type of different projects. So that's super cool. Tell us a little bit more about an interview with you. What does that look like? Do you keep your interviews pretty creative? Do you keep them pretty traditional? Give us a glimpse into an interview with Alex, and what do you look for in some of the responses?
No, but you know, the interviews with me are they're pretty easygoing, because before they come to me, you know, they have been with the different team members. So what we're doing, as you know, as a structure on the interviews, is say that we're hiring a product owner. We have cross interviews from the technology department or the operations department, since you know, these divisions are so intertwined. We have a lot of people in being part of the interview process. So when it comes to me, it's pretty much a done deal already, because the far smarter people in product and technology have said that this is the candidate. So what the interview with me is really about understanding who the person is, making sure that, you know, it's a cultural fit, but more importantly, understanding, you know, the goals and the aspirations of this person, and making sure that we as an organization can cater to that, and make sure if we are not exactly set up to cater to those needs, how can we do certain changes to make sure that we are the best place for that person to work.
Right. Absolutely. No, that sounds exciting, because it's also an opportunity for a candidate to, you know, interview you as well as a leader, as, you know, as an executive who is leading that organization, and for them to be able to ask questions and get a glimpse into, you know, what they're getting into as well. So that's definitely exciting.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well there. It is probably, honestly, what you're saying. My interviews are probably me being interviewed rather than other way around. So.
No, for sure. And I see that as a trend amongst a lot of executives, that it's really also an opportunity for the candidate. Because like you said, before they get to the C-level, they've been, you know, vetted left and right, all kinds of assessments, especially if it's a technical role, whatever the assessment or whatever the team exercises and whatnot. And as they go through that progression, it's also important. That whole candidate experience, in my view, it's so important that, because that will really be a decision factor for them as well.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And there is where, you know, we're taking our recruitment process tremendously serious. And, you know, we need to be extremely responsive to the candidates. We need to be able to sell the yellow pepper. But we're also extremely tedious, right? Like with different tests, especially on the technological side. Yeah. We don't really care about the outcome of the test, but understanding, you know, the problem-solving skills and these type of things. So we're, you know, extremely detailed in that work. And I think that, you know, for us being a quite small organization, it's tremendous the impact that we know that each and every one has inside the organization. So when we're recruiting, we really need to make sure that, you know, we are getting top tier talent immediately. And that the way of doing that is obviously making sure that it's the right candidate, but also it's making sure that we are the most attractive place for these resources to come and work.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Lately, for a lot of my different clients that I'm working with, Some of the most challenging roles have been around data, data science, data modeling, you know, data building, kind of the data warehouse to create, you know, this predictive analytics module and so forth. So it's been an interesting couple of months as we partner with our clients to find that very niche unicorn type of, you know, skill set. I'm curious, from your standpoint, being in financial technology, what are the most kind of in-demand yet very challenging skill set for you guys to find? And how do you go about actually finding that?
Yeah, no, overall, I would start overall. We have a huge issue in the financial and in, you know, the technology industry. And the number one scarcity that we have is really women, right? Mm-hmm. We have today in Yellow Pepper, we have 27% women. And we really need to strive, or we're striving to get this to an equal balance, right? Because we want to be the most diverse workplace we can be. Mm-hmm. And right now, you know, we have done tremendously well on different nationalities and so forth, but we are not, we have simply failed in recruiting women to the positions that we need. So there, I think, like, you know, overall, I think there is a tremendous lack of women in the workforce for financial technology. And I think that, you know, technology and finance industry has done a very poor job in being able to recruit there as well. So there is something overall that we need to really improve on. If we're looking at specific skill sets, I agree with you. You know, data modeling is tremendously hard to find. Resources within, if we're looking, I would say, expertise within cloud security, client security, you're looking at seasoned DevOps, you know, the list goes on and on. I feel that we have a shortage everywhere. What we're doing in order to try to really be able to increase the talent pool that we're having is that we're quite open for recruitment in different locations. We don't necessarily need everybody to be in the same place. So we're open in that way. And we have operations and offices. I think we have offices in 5 markets right now. So we have a bigger pool that we can start tapping into, but it's still a very, very hard process to really be able to increase, the different layers of the funnel. So we're actively, our HR team is, you know, even if we're not hiring, we're always hiring. We're out building our pipe, making sure that we always have a continuous inflow of people. And when we find people that are extremely talented, we always hire them, whether the need is immediate or not, because it's just too precious of an opportunity.
For sure. And that's great to hear that, you know, at the end of the day, even if you're not actively recruiting for a particular role, but you do come across, you know, an A-type personality or A-type of candidate, that you guys actually create an opportunity for them to join you guys. So that's pretty cool. Alex, last but not least, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Currently reading, I'm reading Richard Rothstein's The Color of Law. So I just started off, but it's tremendously interesting about how the federal, the state, and local governments has driven and is continue to driving the segregation of our society. So that one is, I definitely recommend it. I haven't gotten through it yet, but it's definitely going to be something to recommend. And then I'm a big fan of the Norwegian writer Knausgård's autobiography. So it's a 6-volume series about his quite ordinary life, but there is a lot of thoughts and experiences in his life that are very relatable, and then it's tremendously well written. So that one is the one I recommend always.
That's great. Thanks for those recommendations, and for our listeners, we'll make those titles and authors available in the episode notes. Alex, I know you're a very busy guy. Thanks so much for finding time to join us today on the Ivy Podcast. Very short conversations, but, you know, packed with a lot of great insights. I personally learned quite a bit, so I do appreciate your lent expertise to us.
No, thank you, sir. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.